And welcome back to episode 157 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
So, Carl, we are back for what is, not to say the last episode, the penultimate episode of January 2024. I can't believe I'm saying that. We're already looking at the next second month of the year after January, which is just nuts. Where has the time gone?
Who knows? It's just been nonstop this month.
Well, it has, isn't it? You know, we kick off the year with the CES, don't we? You know, that seems to come around quicker and quicker every year. CES is done and dusted now. Now we're looking forward. You know, we're kind of thinking about WWDC. We've got, you know, the Vision Pro has launched, you know, when we were first talking about that? I think, what was it 2 years ago nearly?
Yeah.
When that was first rumored. And now the product is available as of next week in the US, which is absolutely unbelievable. I can't believe, where has that time gone? Well, that is the launch story for this week. We're going to talk Vision Pro. We're going to talk flying iPhones. We're going to talk Battle Mage, the X-Real Air 2 Ultra. Yes, they've probably stolen that naming convention from Apple. And we're going to talk sideloading of iOS apps. Yeah, a contentious story for some. One I still personally don't agree with, but that's for different reasons. And in the rumor mill, we're going to talk iPhone 16, because of course, it's iPhone 16 time.
It's that time of the year, isn't it?
Exactly. We're thinking iPhone 16 because that's going to be our upgrade because we skipped the 15.
Yep.
But let's take it right back then to Apple Vision Pro, which, as I said, it has finally launched. You can now purchase one. Well, I say you can purchase one. You've got a bit of a wait time, haven't you, now?
But
you
can buy one. And some hoops to jump through.
You can. So tell us all about the Vision Pro then, as it's going to ship in the US next Friday, the 2nd of November.
Yeah, so this was a bit of an odd announcement, wasn't it? Basically,
it was.
Tim Cook just tweeted that this date, so you can pre-order, this is when it'll be out. And then eventually there was a post up on Apple's website. But I was kind of expecting maybe, I don't know, a consumer event?
I wonder whether or not they've soft-launched this to avoid any too much negative press. Not because the product's terrible, but because there's a whole section of critics in the marketplace that go in, this isn't going to work, this is overpriced, who are your real consumers here, all of this kind of stuff, you know what I mean? You know,
could well be. I mean, and it is a price and a half, as we said. So pre-orders started back on the 19th, was that last Friday, wasn't it? With a due out on the 2nd. Now, to actually place an order, first you need to be in the US. Second, you actually need an iPhone with Face ID, otherwise you can't actually do the order. So, that's some stumbling blocks to start off with. But I imagine.
Can you explain why that is? Why do you need that?
Because it's something to do molding it to their face, isn't it? And checking the prescription lenses if you have prescription lenses.
That's right. So you've got to. Use, isn't it, the phone as part of the pre-order process to do like a face scan, isn't it, or a face ID?
So once you've got past that, you can part with this princely sum of $3,499, and that doesn't get you a lot of storage, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It only gets you 256 gig as standard, which, and this is non-upgradable because it's part of the M2 on the chip. So if you want more storage,
this is Apple. Nothing's upgradable.
But yeah, so if you want 512, you're looking at just under, what, $3,700? And a terabyte's just under $3,900. That's a lot of money. You need to get a fair bit in the box. So you don't just get your Vision headset. You get a solo knit band and a dual loop band. So two different types of bands to hold it on your face. You get the light seal and two light seal cushions. That's doing the VR piece rather than AR, isn't it? You get a cover for the outside screen so you don't scratch it. You hold the press, you get a polishing cloth. The £20 polishing cloth. The one that Apple sells separately. You get the battery, you get a USB-C charging cable and a USB-C power adapter, which is different for Apple. Don't usually throw those in the box.
No, so that is, I guess, for Apple this time around, because it comes with this battery pack, doesn't it, and all that kind of stuff, that they want you to have it as an experience. I mean, not, you know, in theory, you probably got those anyway if you're an Apple consumer, because if you're part of this kind of cash, it's very likely that you've got high-end Apple equipment already, my personal opinion of that is. What I would also say here is that it's interesting that they've put both the solo knit band and the dual loop band in, because if you recall from all of the initial pictures and that, it was just the solo knit band, wasn't it? Shown.
So the dual one, is that the one that goes over the top of the head as well?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Now, interesting, I was listening to a couple of podcasts recently that have had like some of the journalists who have tried the the thing on, and there were some concerns about the weight. Now, initially, it's a lot lighter than they thought it was going to be, but a few people have said that they found that it's had discomfort after wearing it for two or three times. Now, I don't know whether that's because maybe they're not used to VR headsets, or whether it's just it's quite a not tight fitting, but it's obviously close fitting, isn't it, to your head?
It is,
And given the battery life, I think 2.5 hours. This thing isn't going to be designed to be worn all day long, is it? Let's be honest. This is something you're going to pick up. You're going to have an experience with, whether it's watching a film, being totally ignoring your family while sat in the house, or you're going to be working spatially. I can't see many people keeping this on all day long.
It's probably designed so it's lighter than the Quest 2. I think it's 450 grams up or state, and I quickly googled the Quest 2 now. That's apparently 500 grams. So it is a little lighter, but that's just the headset. That's not the battery, because the battery is separate. And this is where I think the problem comes in. It's all that weight on the front with no counterbalance on the back. That's causing discomfort. It's a lot of digging into your nose and your bridge, underneath your eyes, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when you look at it, obviously you've got the large glass front, haven't you? Then you've got the there's no counterweight, as you say. It's just more of the loop and the band, isn't it? With the cables are coming, I think, on the left-hand side from it, I recall, and goes like that. I do believe it looks great. Yep. One thing I haven't seen yet, and I really want to see, is the kind of weird ghost eyes.
In real life on a video, not Apple.
Because all the
what do they call that again?
Oh, I can't remember what they called.
Eyesight.
That's it. It displays your eyes when others come past. I mean, how freaky is that going to be?
I know, it's going to be weird.
But it does seem to me that this is a real soft launch. I can't say anything different to that at all.
But talking of eyes, though, they are offering prescription lenses actually quite reasonably. They're Zeiss prescription lenses. They're $149 regardless of your prescription, as far as I'm aware. Now, I don't know how they cater for really bad eyes. I don't know how far up or down the plus negative it goes on the old prescription there. But $150 for some prescription lenses, custom fit to a device, seems pretty good to me. And if you just need kind of normal lenses because you kind of need it for reading, then they're only $99.
So this is, I have to say, this is one thing that really did surprise me as well. I was expecting this to be not phenomenally expensive, but kind of outside the realms of affordability. But you're right, they have gone here and gone in quite, well, I'm going to say quite affordable. Is that the right word to look at it?
I would say that. I mean, I've looked at inserts for things like my ski goggles and my Quest 2 headset. Although I want to get my eyes retested before I go and purchase, but my eyes are quite bad. And I'm still easy looking at $150 pounds, should I say, just to get those.
Yeah, so the way they've done this is that they have two ways of doing it. They have ability for you to put in your prescription order, and apparently in the US, I haven't had it confirmed, they have scanning technology that can scan the lenses of your glasses for the depth and the curvature and all those kind of things as well.
Yeah.
So that makes them available. And obviously, and Zeiss themselves, there's a link from the Apple support website to the Zeiss prescription guide where you can put in... if you have a different prescription or you're worried, you can put in all of your details. So I don't know if you get a chance to try it at some point.
I'll have to give it a go.
You can put that in. And it also, one thing that also caught my, again, this is, we have to stress at the moment, this is US, just to be really clear at the minute. Yeah. There's no word on what's going to be happening. It also says if you wear glasses without any distance correction, so just for reading, they provide three standard strengths of inserts.
Okay.
So a 0.75 to 1.25, 0.150 to 1.75, a 0.2 to 0.275. And you can basically buy an insert that matches, roughly speaking, where your vision lies, if that. And so it matches the reader. So it says there, they caveat saying a very small number of people who use readers might experience vision discomfort, such as eye strain. Consult your doctor, basically.
Wow, I've just slapped my details in on the Zeiss website. Yeah, that was a negative.
No way. Sorry, guys.
We are really sorry, but your prescription value goes beyond the available range. So, even if I was in the US and had an iPhone to scan my face, I couldn't use it anyway then, apparently.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. But it says here, if you use contact lenses, you don't need the the things. It says works fine. And it says here, Apple Vision Pro uses where a person looks to navigate within Vision OS. If some medical conditions, such as those involve eyelid drooping, changes in eye alignment, such as lazy eye or uncontrolled eye movements, might make it difficult for Apple Vision Pro to properly detect your eyes. This might impact your experience. So, oh, dear. You know, as it goes,
yep.
They've done a great job in, I think, catering for, let's say, the bulk of people.
Yeah,
You know, they've made it affordable in the sense that the inserts are not phenomenally expensive. Given that you're dropping, you know, $3,500 US
minimum, yep.
on it, you know, what's another $149, you know, on top of that? You know, realistically, you know.
Don't forget, you're going to need Apple Care. Because Apple did release some pricing around repairs.
Yes, so it's not cheap.
If you crack the glass screen at all, that's $800 to repair it.
Ouch.
And damage to other parts of the Pro could cost as much as $2,400.
Yes. Hmm. No, there was a,
so
there was
Apple a Care is intake. Highly recommended.
Highly recommended or probably or, mandatory.
Unless you've got money to throw away.
Yeah, they have, clearly.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pricey.
How many of these do you expect to see on a return? Because I reckon there's going to be a lot of journalists buying this up for the two-week period, running through their journalistic attempts with it, getting all the stories, and then taking them back.
I imagine so. But are Apple going to accept them back?
Well, if you haven't bought the inserts, surely there must be caveat here, because there's got to be
a returns window, isn't there?
Yeah, it has to be. There has to be return window, and there also has to be consumer law here, isn't it?
We're talking the US though.
Yeah, I do think there's still some consumer protection on that though. Hence the 14. I think they have a return period, don't they? So
okay, well, yeah, we'll see. We're waiting for these reviews to come out. Next week or week after.
By this time in 2 weeks, we should have some real world reviews on our hands. So for those that have pre-ordered, which opened up on the 19th of January, it'll go on general. Well, it says not general sale. You'll be able to basically get them from February 2nd. I think I read somewhere, and don't quote me, but I swear I read somewhere that they've sold out now already.
They have sold out. There's a lead time. I don't know how long it was, but you won't be getting. If you order now, you won't be getting on the 2nd.
No, and Apple. I think Apple again are going to be careful here. They're not going to. Well, we know that Apple does a just in time supply chain, doesn't it? So they're not going to have a warehouse full of these things ready to go. They're going to have estimated very accurately, given the information they work on, what the likely pre-sale was going to be, and they clearly met that. And now I think all the shipping times now have slipped to about 5 to 7 weeks. I think it was the.
I heard they'd kind of pre-sold 160,000 to 180,000 units. It's a fair amount.
Yeah, but
not 180... iPhone quantity, obviously, but for a £3,500 VR AR headset, I think that's not bad.
Yeah, if you think what's that rough mass, 180,000 times 3,500, roughly speaking, that's a kind of a net of 630 million.
Not bad.
No, and don't forget that's not taking into account people who've gone for higher storage or the Zeiss lenses. Now, and of course, we don't know what the profit margin here on them is, but Apple aren't running a loss leader here, are they? Let's be honest.
No, I imagine they're making at least 50% profit.
Yeah, so I'm interested to really see some real world examples, and I think. This is going to be a bit like, I think we said this before, I think this is going to be a bit like the Gen 1 Apple Watch in that it knows what it wants to be, but it's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
If because like we said, Gen 1 Apple Watch, great product, just didn't really hit the mark, did it? It didn't quite do everything it kind of wanted to be expectation-wise.
Whereas, still got one sitting in the cupboard.
Yeah, but you think of that Ultra 2 you've got sat on your wrist there, you know, Series 8 that I've got here. That does, it works. And it works really well.
Yeah, it does.
To the point now where the standard of digital watch is Apple.
Yep.
And I think
undoubtedly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with the Vision Pro, Apple are entering a market, you know, with VR AR that I would realistically say is dominated by Oculus, Meta.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
You know, and whilst there is a strong market around it, it's still a niche market, isn't it? You know, we haven't entered that phase of everybody's got a VR headset. And if you look at the other one, you know, do you remember when was it 3D TVs came out and everybody said, oh yeah, 3D TVs are the best thing ever, and you know, you'll wear those glasses. How many, I don't know about you, but the amount of people I knew who had 3D TVs and got rid of them.
I've still got one. It's in our bedroom. A 48 Samsung. No, we don't. I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you where the glasses are. And they were active shutter ones as well.
Yeah, this is it. This is it, isn't it?
I watched one or two movies and went, no, it's okay.
So can you see yourself having a Vision Pro and being sat in your living room with your family and watching somebody on the Vision Pro?
I'd love to, but man, I would get shot for being rude.
This is divorce in a box.
It is.
You know, I'd love to try one. I really would love to try one, to try meetings, or, you know, considering I use a Mac, to have an extended experience. And that's fine when I'm working at home at my desk, but it's not really, you know, unless you live alone or live a very strange existence, this isn't going to be what I class as a family entertainment, would it?
No. Well, talking about, we've got one that might be interesting later. If you're going to be using it in your office for work, so we'll come back to that. Yeah.
So Vision Pro then already out now. Like you say, very soft, very quiet launch, really, wasn't it? As opposed to that. I wonder. Do you know what? Final comment on it. Given that obviously by the time Dub comes out, I bet you it'll feature really heavily at Dub.
I think it will. Yep.
So then, right, Vision Pro. So let's go from Vision Pro to flying iPhones then.
Oh, which, wow.
We shouldn't make light of this.
No,
Bobby,
we should not. So there was, what was it? Oh, back at the beginning of January, I think first or second week of January, there was Alaska Airlines flight, which just minutes after takeoff, a door plug that used for emergency exiting unexpectedly blew out and basically blew the door off, didn't it? And sucked a load of items out. Luckily, no people, but just a lot of belongings. So one of those belongings was an iPhone, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. And, you know, so just to kind of take a step back, so the door plugs are, it's a fixed panel, so that is blocks off an emergency exit. So when they have more seats, you know, they have a lot of seats on these planes, but if they haven't got enough seats to trigger the safety requirement for those additional exits, they plug the doors, you know. Yeah. So they, from all intents and purposes, as a passenger, you shouldn't know there's a door there. So from inside the plane, it just looks like a normal window. But as you say, this 737 from Alaska was flying early January and blew out, didn't it? You know, the bolts of it popped out. Now, as I understand it, I don't believe a passenger was sat by the door, but it was one sat close by, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So the plane was at, what, 16,000 feet when this happened?
About that,
Obviously, still only a couple of minutes after takeoff, but it got up there quite quick. It blew out. So, of course, the National Transport Safety Board, they've launched an investigation and asked the public for help in searching for, you know, one, the missing
the door
wasn't
it?
And other objects that might have come out. So during that search effort, there was a guy called Sean Bates came across an intact iPhone lying on the side of the road. He contacted the NTSB. They confirmed it actually belonged to a passenger on the flight. But he's got photos of this, and it looks pretty much unscratched, doesn't it? It looks in immaculate condition, being dropped from 16,000 feet.
Yeah, when I was reading this article and looking at it, I was just like, you know, apart from being a bit wet, it looks like there's a screen protector. The picture wasn't it, on 95 Mac. It looks like there's a screen protector on it.
It's got a screen protector on by the look of it.
You know, what do I have to tell you about cases? And you tell me, oh, you know, I like to have mine naked.
It's not my case that's the problem. It's the screen.
but yeah, it looks in pretty good condition, and apart from what appears to be the end of a USB cable,
the person was obviously charging this at the time, wasn't it? And just got ripped out of his hand, so it's still got half a USB cable attached to it.
But the only bit that really gets this would just be terrible. So the guy that found it picked it up, apparently swiped it up. It had no passcode. What's wrong with you people?
Security people. Yeah.
Yeah. But apparently he opened it up and to prove that it was the Alaskan Airlines flight or one flight, there was a baggage receipt from Alaskan Airlines on the phone saying that the passenger in the question had checked in two bags. Oh my God. So yeah, I mean, look, amazing that it landed as it did. It looks in pretty good condition. I don't know whether or not the person's got it back yet.
No.
But yeah, and apparently though, that was the second phone. I don't know if you saw that. That was the second phone to be recovered. But they did find the door. The door has been recovered. That was found as well. Yeah. So, but yeah, of all the things, you know, it's quite funny, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, that's impressive. I don't know. That was just a fluke, I'm sure. You know, that's just it landed just the right angle, whatever. But impressive nonetheless. I think it was an iPhone. It's even an iPhone 14 or 15 because it has dynamic islands. So it's one of those. I'm not entirely sure which one it was.
Yeah, that's right. And it was found by somebody who was looking for the door, wasn't it? I think, because they asked for help in finding the door and they found it lying under a bush on the side of a road. I mean, let's be honest, that is a needle in a haystack find, isn't it? You know, the chances of finding it were pretty slim. But yeah, so there you go. I mean, maybe Apple can use that in their next advertising. You know, if you know Apple survives plane, I don't want to say plane crash.
Maybe put something about actually putting a passcode on your phone. In this day and age, I mean, that's the biggest shock to me. Not let it survive 16,000 feet. There are still people who don't have passcodes on their phones.
Yeah, what are we more worried about here? But no, sorry, I shouldn't have said crash. I apologize. What I meant was incident on the aircraft.
It landed. Everyone was okay.
Everybody was fine. It was apart from the iPhone.
Bit windswept, I imagine, but okay.
Well, yeah, and now what that, you know, just to kind of, I guess, cover that story a little bit more, is that now there has been a nationwide, not recall, but a nationwide inspection of all of that particular aircraft type to understand whether or not other ones they're doing. And I think from what I read, they have found additional aircraft in different fleets that need the doors, these plugs, retightening as well. So, it's you know, an accident which thankfully resulted in no injuries or fatalities, but could have, you know, certainly been a lot worse. But not a good thing. But yeah, flying iPhones it is, though. Impressive work if you're, you know,
maybe
again,
that was the
like
titanium.
Oh, don't tell me that. I want the iPhone 16 to have wings.
So it's like a drone.
Yeah, you just pop out.
All right, so yeah, our next story is Battle Mage, isn't it? Intel's Battle Mage GPU. So obviously we've had the first generation Alchemist, wasn't it?
It was, yep.
Oh, so yeah, who was it? It was at CES. Tom Peterson is one of the Intel fellows. So very, very high up there. It was talking about Battle Mage. Basically, the hardware's done. It's now in the software team's hands, and the hardware team's moved on to Celestial, which is the third generation one. So we're hoping we should see it out next year. But interestingly, they're very much aiming at, was it the enthusiast segment, wasn't it? So what, talking 4080 level performance?
Which I think it's pretty good. I mean, obviously, that is pretty high end, though, you know, given that the majority of people buying GPUs are probably in that space, maybe slightly below. But I mean, from Intel perspective, it's pretty an aggressive target, you know.
But if they could do a 4080 level performance at an actual reasonable price,
That's then the key, isn't
a winner there, isn't it?
And that is the crux of the story here. It isn't whether can Intel pull this off?
Can I do it at a reasonable price? Yeah.
Exactly. Because the problem we've got right now with the whole GPU market is still a shortage of GPUs. And this is down to the AI movement. You know, what was it Mark Zuckerberg said the other day? He was going to spend how many billions on NVIDIA GPUs, you know, for their new AI farm? It was in billions, wasn't it? I'm sure it was like 35 billion or something stupid like that. You know, so having a third, you know, it's been a very long time since we've had an alternative option to the incumbents. And, you know, I think Intel need to be there. And whether or not they make a real dent in the market probably isn't the bigger issue here. I think and this is kind of brought up a little bit in the article, and I kind of agree with it. The sentiment of it says here, you know, one of the guy who was from PC Gamer was saying that it's more about the drivers here, isn't it? It's about even if, you know, I quote, if he says, even if you, you know, buy AMD or an NVIDIA graphics card, the key to success with the college drivers, and this is it, because actually what we're going to do here is it's going to push NVIDIA and AMD to sit up and go, oh, hang on a minute. We've kind of had this friendly rivalry for so many years, isn't it? You know, but it's no real, I say competition. It's kind, it is, because they're neck and neck. Yeah, having Intel snapping at their heels.
Yeah, NVIDIA will take the high ground. AMD take the middle. And yeah, they kind Intel of have to coexist, don't they?
It could do. And I think, you know, this is the thing, because how often do we see driver issues left, right, and center? And Alchemist themselves had issues, didn't they, with the early launch? But, you know, just the more they can improve it, the better. I want to see this. And if it's affordable and it gives you the quality, then why wouldn't you consider it?
Because I can quite easily get hold of a 4080 now. But the minimum price I can get hold of one for is £1,079. Which is, that's crazy money.
It is crazy money. I mean, there was a time when you'd have paid that for the top end Founders Edition.
That would have been your Titan, wouldn't it? Or less than that for your Titan, your 3090 Ti or whatever.
Yeah, but we've got the 4080 Super coming out soon. I think comes out the end of the month.
Can't see pricing that yet. That's going to be cheaper, isn't it?
Well, the manufacturers, I looked this up earlier because I was curious. The manufacturer's recommended retail price from NVIDIA says starting at £959. That's obviously when you look at it from the UK site. You know, take that with a pinch of salt. You're still looking at over 1,000, aren't you, realistically, from other vendors?
Exactly.
But, I don't know. I love... I've got a dog talking to me now. I love the idea of having an alternative, you know. Back in the day when we had those alternatives, graphics cards were cheaper. I'm not suggesting we're going to drive the prices down to super, super cheap. But what we're going to have here is real choice. Because that's not what you have at the moment. There is no choice, is it, ultimately?
No, the only choice is how much money you're going to spend.
Yeah, and that's not a choice. That's a painful decision.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, look, I'm rooting for Intel. I want them to do well here, and I really want to see the performance of when these Battle Mage cards come out. Plus, I love the name. Who doesn't love the name Battle Mage?
Oh, exactly. They're great names. Competitor. I'm going to say that very loosely to the Vision Pro. So Xreal announced their Air 2 Ultra powered by Qualcomm's new spatial computing chip. Now, this is considerably cheaper than the Vision Pro, and to be honest, it won't do half the stuff. But as, Jay, you were mentioning about using this in your office, weren't you, and
Looking
it up to a Mac. Well, basically, this is just, it's a pair of AR glasses. They look like sunglasses. Purely AR, no VR, but will allow you to pop up multiple monitors or applications and, you know, anchor them in a virtual or AR world. So you can have, I don't know, two or three monitors virtual. And then, do your day-to-day. But they are, $700 rather than $3,500 as the Vision Pro is. They're considerably lighter. They're 80 grams. Versus 450 grams of the Vision, But then it has no local computing.
No.
It has all the sensors. You need to plug it into an iPhone or Android, something with USB-C, into a Windows laptop or a MacBook to provide the grunt. But say, sitting at your desk, I could see a use for this one. Rather than having these huge, big monitors taking up space, just stick on a pair of sunglasses.
See, I really like this. I think they look really good as well, you know.
Yeah,
if you can, these look like a pair of sunglasses, don't they?
Head on. They do,
And I kind of, and I was talking to you about it before we started recording. This is the evolution of Google Glass. This is a real AR, experience. They look quite nice, and I think you're right. That whole, I don't necessarily need the VR piece, but the AR being able to have multiple monitors to see that without real strain is a really attractive proposition for me.
Yeah, I mean, 80 grams, you could wear that all day long.
Yeah, exactly. I was just saying, the weight.
I don't know what my glasses actually weigh. I don't think I've ever weighed them, but it can't be much less than that.
Not really. And, and these have got adjustable temples. They've got three positions. You've got different nose pads. So these are designed for you to wear long term. They've got a lot of comfort issues here. And they do look good. You can pre-order them now, I noticed, from their website. The website has got the weirdest picture of an AR woman wearing these glasses, it freaks me out, if I'm honest with you. The developer says a lot of cool things. They're saying that, they've got a 52 degree field of view. Up to 120 hertz in 2D, you know, 90 hertz in 3D. And, you know, I don't know. They just look good. They look really cool glasses.
I'm interested in them. I've got to buy myself a Quest 3 first. But after that, maybe.
Yeah. So the screen, so spatial computing is supported. This is where it gets interesting on that, by the way. So they support spatial computing, which is a terrible term, but we'll go with it, on the Samsung S22 and S23. They do screen mirroring through USB-C video output, HDMI, iPhone, Android, MacBook, Steam Deck, ROG Ally, and the Windows PC. We already talked about the ROG Ally the other day, weren't we?
I know, yeah.
It's got the X-Real Beam, which is a 3D, 3DOF, so 3D field of vision, I guess, isn't it? And the Nebula for Mac Beta, which is, I think, must be there, perhaps multiple display view. But yeah, this one, I had to tell you, because when you told me earlier about your Vision Pro cleaning cloth, well, this comes with a cleaning cloth as well and a protective case.
Is it a £20 cleaning cloth?
Probably £20 in weight. Yeah, probably.
But yeah, I mean, obviously it says spatial computing. I presume, is that where you can pin Windows and they anchored in AR? I presume that will come to other platforms. You know, it's just
must
just
do out. Surely, yeah.
But these guys have been around for a while, haven't they? So. And this is a developer device at the moment, so I don't think it's retail launch, but they do a number of different headsets. So this is not the first rodeo.
So they're also going to be releasing alongside this, not available yet, is an X-Real custom computing unit, apparently.
Yeah, they did mention, I presume it'll be something that clips onto your belt or something like that, so you can just wander around. With that. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently it also supports, so I did, when I went to buy one, which I didn't hit buy, just so we're really clear on this. It does also say that Switches, PlayStation 5s and Xbox are also
basically anything that can use, as a matter of USB-C or DisplayPort as an output can be brought in and just, as you mentioned, 2D, 2D screen. It won't be anchored, but it'll just move wherever your head moves. So
they are pretty cool. They some of their older products, so they've got the X-Real Air, the X-Real Air 2 Pro, and things like that. And they've gone really much for the sunglasses AR view, haven't they? You know,
it's definitely
that. But yeah, a what I'd say is a cool looking device. I'm definitely interested to see more about these. You know, if a little bit cheaper, I might consider it. But I want to know more. I'd like to see some real world examples when they come out.
Did you have a look at what the Beam looks like?
The little box.
It looks like an iPod.
Yeah. The jog wheel, like a disc in the middle. Yeah, so it's white, isn't it, with a grey jog wheel in the middle?
Is it? Yeah.
And it's got blue and red buttons either side of it.
Interesting.
I did. Yeah, did you see the pictures? So there's some pictures of reviews, and one has got the glasses plugged into it, and it does look like somebody's plugged headphones into an iPod.
Awesome.
Yeah, very very odd. But there you go. The X-Real, X-Real Air 2. Thank you. I couldn't get the words out. Awesome. All right, so let's talk about sideloading then, because the other big contentious issue, of course, at the moment for Apple is the compliance with the DMA and the sideloading argument, which we now know Apple are going to allow sideloading on iOS.
Don't but really have a choice.
It's been a bit of a development, hasn't it?
Yeah, so we kind of know that they had, Tim Cook had meetings with Margarethe Vestager from the EU's Commissioner's Competition. A competition commissioner, I should say. So they met, to talk about the requirements of DMA, how Apple's going to have to comply by the deadline. We've heard that Apple, again, are really not happy about this, are they? That they kind of cite privacy security concerns, which we can kind of understand there. Some more information kind of came to light after that, didn't they? Another article posted, I think yesterday it was, or with claims from the Wall Street Journal that basically claiming that although apps will be available outside the App Store for the first time, Apple still plans to charge fees and conduct app review processes for side-loaded apps.
This is brilliant.
I'm not sure how they're planning to do that. I'm trying to think this through in my head how that would work.
I did that. And also, my I think I said to you at the time when we were kind of having another discussion about this was, how is that going to be compliant? But as you pointed out, Apple will have gone through this with a fine tooth comb from a legal standpoint. And if the wording says nothing about, not being able to charge, they're going to argue their point, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Or audit them. Yeah, it just it has to have the ability for a third-party store or to be sideloaded, I imagine. But yeah, not they can't still charge or audit or review.
Whilst I don't agree on the sideloading argument, because the App Store is not like 10 years ago when it was the Wild West and a free-for-all.
Yeah.
And I don't, there aren't many apps today that you can't get on the store. Does that make sense? You know, realistically Fortnite. Speaking, well, we're so sorry, yeah. I get on the Mac, right? And everybody that argues, well, yeah, but the Mac, you can do it on the Mac. The Mac is a computer.
Yeah.
The Mac is a computer. It's a different ethos. Now, I know that you could argue, well, the iPhone's a computer. Well, yeah, it probably is. But typically speaking, on the iPhone themselves or the phone, people tend to have far more sensitive data, I think, at the minute, realistically speaking, used in a day-to-day process. Now, I'm not saying my PC or my Mac, excuse me, I haven't got personal information. But I will tell you now, unlike many years ago, I do most of my personal banking, personal information, health information is on my phone. And I want that thing as secure as possible without risk of causing it. Now, you're right. You could probably argue, well, it's your personal risk if you want to go installing apps from Billy Bob's, famous application store or name another one. That's entirely up to you. You're right. But surely Apple has a duty of care to me to say, well, if you want to do that, we can't protect you, you know?
Yeah.
I appreciate not everybody agrees, but it's just, to me, it seems, why would you want to put yourself in that position to use some dodgy, and given, let's be honest, given the world we live in today and the amount of scams, the amount of identity theft that is done.
The amount of people
device,
don't have passcodes on their phone.
Funny that. you're right. And I'm not talking about, sophisticated scams. I'm talking about SMS style scams. I'm talking about, what was the one I showed you this morning from the post office here in the UK that I got on my phone?
Oh, you did, yep.
That came through. It was iMessage from Aston Vargas 9 at gmail.com. I mean, try harder next time, please. Your raw mail package has arrived at the warehouse and cannot be delivered due to incomplete address information. Please confirm your address in the link within 12 hours. Then it's got a URL, which I won't read out. But for anybody in the UK, you'd be like, what is that? It's a .top account /UK. And then it says, please reply with a Y, then exit the SMS, open the SMS activation link again, copy the link to Safari browser and open it. The Royal Mail team wishes you a wonderful day. I mean, how convoluted is your scam?
They need to employ someone in product marketing and make that a bit slicker. But it's clearly trying to get your 2FA code, isn't it? Or something along those lines.
But this is my point, right? That's not a sophisticated scam, is it? But somebody will fall for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. And if the general public can't even be trusted to put a passcode on the phone and secure it, what hope do they have with third-party app stores and sideloading of keeping their device secure?
You're right. And trusting where that application has come from. Now, look, we all know something slipped through the net. Not just with Apple,
it's not perfect.
And with Android as well. But it's a darn sight better than it ever was. Wasn't it? Realistically speaking.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think here, I give it months, probably weeks. In fact, weeks before there is a news report that says there's, some scam or I lost all my money or because I installed an app from somewhere which wasn't off the App Store.
And it'll be all Apple's fault.
100%. Exactly the same way that those parents who allow their children to spend thousands of pounds, dollars on, trinkets for whatever game is Apple's fault as well. Despite Apple making it very clear. Exactly. I got real strong views on that. And I think, sometimes you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink approach, isn't it?
Some people just need to take some responsibility for their own actions.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much, But yeah, I think this is going to fall foul of it. And given, say that Apple, there's rumors, again, it is rumors, I should stress, that Apple are going to charge for reviewing and doing it. Let's be honest. You and I both know, and a lot of people, who follow this, know full well that Apple will have to comply, but they will make it as difficult as possible within the rules to comply, won't they?
And this won't be for everyone. This will only be in the EU.
Yeah.
So it won't even cover the UK, will it? So we won't even get to try sideloading, I wouldn't have thought.
No, we won't. Which I'm not worried about, quite frankly. But some people maybe.
No.
I genuinely get that.
Yeah.
But I would not be worried about it.
But if you want that much control, and just go and buy an Android.
Yeah.
Two clear paths. If you want control to the nth degree and to customize and do whatever you want, go buy an Android device. If you want a nice, safe-ish walled garden that works the same way on every device and integrates with an ecosystem, go and buy Apple.
Yeah, simple as.
I don't really know what the problem is.
I'm not sure either. I'm not sure. But, you know, actually, if you take a look at Android now, and if you buy a Pixel and things like that, Android themselves are trying to secure those devices more and more, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a lot more locked down than what it used to be.
You're right. It's still a more open operating system because of the principles of, you know, what it's based on. But, yeah, I know it's a contentious view. I get it. I know that our opinions, and that's it. Look, everybody's entitled to their opinion. We respect yours, and hopefully you respect ours. But I just think this is going to end in tears. Not because people can't be trusted, but because it's not about people being trusted. It's about the nefarious element in society that will exploit this the minute they can.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And I'm sure Tim, in meeting with Margarete, probably wanted to drive that point home.
I imagine so. So, yeah, we will. But they have to comply. Is it? I want to say May this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Somewhere around that.
DMA.
This year.
The DMA needs to be coming out. When is it? So they came into force last year, but they've got until March. Yes, that's it. They've got until March, the early first week of March this year.
Okay, so we only really have a month, 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. So
we'll 22 find out soon how this plays out.
Yeah, so 22 companies were identified as gatekeepers, including Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, ByteDance, Meta, and Microsoft. And they were core platform services as well. So they're also identified as core platform services. Sorry, I'll rephrase that. 22 companies across 22 services across 6 companies, which were those affirmed, were identified as core platform services. That was it, excuse me. Yep. By the EU in 2023. They have until 6th of March this year to comply with all of the provisions. Okay. So those particular companies and the services they provide, aka the App Store, Play Store, YouTube, you name it, you know, all of those things under there have to be implemented by the 6th of March.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, we will find out very soon.
We will. It's going to be a very interesting month, I'll tell you that one. Right then, that leads us nicely to... Well, it is, as you say, iPhone 16 season, and it's never too early to start talking about what we're going to be getting in September, is it?
No, not at all. So, yes, iPhone 16 Pro Plus and definitely not Mini.
no Minis here.
No Minis anymore. Well, it could surprise us, but no planned Minis. So we're hearing rumours now that some upgrades. Obviously, we'll be getting new processors. So we're hearing that the 16 and 16 Plus will be getting a new A18, and the Pro will be getting the A18 Pro chip. So that's moving back to that single chip. We've lost the split again. Because we used to have the lower cost ones got the previous generation Pro chips.
That's right,
didn't they?
Yep.
So we're going back to an A18 and an A18 Pro. Apparently, that even the lower cost, the non-Pro models will be getting 8 gig of RAM, up from 6 on the 15s. And there's more modems coming out. So apparently the Pro and Pro Max will be getting a new Qualcomm X75 modem, which will give you faster 5G speeds, while your standard 16 and Plus will just use the current X70 modem. But what else have we got? No, I was going to say, interesting. Still no sign of Apple's modem yet. They seem to have gone very quiet.
Well, I think we did talk about that, didn't we? That the Apple modem division they were struggling, weren't they?
Yeah.
And that this given, back in November, I think we talked about that there was rumors that Apple had given up on building its own modem.
Given up? Now, right, okay. Well,
That was the rumor back in November. I was just looking back through our notes. So Qualcomm's still there, and the Qualcomm deal runs until 26. So,
of course, yeah.
It could be that what that means that they haven't given up, but maybe they've reset the project. That could be the reason for it.
Yeah.
But given that it runs through to 2026, means that we still have time. It could be the iPhone 17.
Could be. But the other bits that come with that, though, we are looking apparently an upgrade to the Pro camera system again. The ultra wide, going from a current 12 megapixel, I think, to a 48 megapixel.
Wow, okay.
I think that has to do with the whole Vision Pro stuff, isn't it? If you've got a pair of 48 megapixel front facing cameras, then not front facing, sorry, rear facing cameras, and you can do the 3D video recording.
Yeah, which is the what they call it,
spatial video.
Yeah. So that, of course, you want to get that. I mean, yeah, they're going to want you to take as much video that's compatible with that device as possible, isn't it?
Yeah. Whether you plan to get one or not, but if you've already recorded in it and it's on by default, you know, then when if you do eventually get one, or there's a new low-cost one that comes out and you end up buying it, then you've already got the library of video there, haven't you?
You have indeed. Very good point. So what other support was there in there as well? So new processors, Wi-Fi. New cameras.
Yeah, apparently the lower 16 and plus will be getting Wi-Fi 6E, which the current Pro models do have on the 15, and allegedly the Pro 15 might... Pro 16 might get Wi-Fi 7 that, you know, we just spoke about last week.
We did. I say that's only just been officially launched, hasn't it, Wi-Fi 7?
Yeah, I don't think it's hugely different from Wi-Fi 6E. There's the new, I can't really call it, spatial stream something or other. But, you know, it can still use the 2.4, 5 and 6 gigahertz bands. So it might not be too much of a jump to get Wi-Fi 7 in there, but at least you'll have 6E.
Yeah, so, okay, I guess, you know, pretty standard rumours at this stage, you know, new processors, more RAM, uprated Wi-Fi, uprated camera system. You know, let's be honest, at this stage in the game, you'd be surprised if those things didn't happen, wouldn't
it? Exactly.
You know,
it's pretty standard, really, isn't it? Nothing earth-shattering there.
No, I guess the interest will be whether they retain the iPhone 15 titanium shell. I suspect they probably will. Given that they've just launched that, and they typically tend to keep that for a couple of cycles, don't they?
Yeah, we are maybe getting a new button, aren't we? Not just the action button, but a dedicated camera button.
Now that would be good.
I was watching John Prosser's video this morning, and he was saying about it. Yeah, it's a mechanical button, but it also has capacitive built into it. So if you press down, it immediately takes you to video, but you can then touch, you know, left and right, or up and down, depending on which way you've got to zoom in, zoom out. So, and if you lightly touch it, it'll focus. So quite like a proper camera where you press half down and you get a focus.
Okay, this could be interesting. That would
as long
be...
as I can change it to camera as the default, not
definitely.
Video.
No.
I want to take pictures, but I'm sure that's configurable, just like the action button.
Well, again, we shall see as we go forward. You know, as we get closer, the rumours will leak and drip as they have been for many years now. For me, definitely want to know. Colours are going to be important. I'm sorry, but colour is going to be important.
Yeah, some actual colour, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And whether we get mini OLED screens as well, I guess, as well.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, there you go then. That's probably a good place for us to wrap up for this week. We'll be back the next week for episode 158, the last of January, where we'll have all of the latest tech news and stories. Of course, you can still find us on Twitter at Weekly Tech Rant, and of course, all of our show notes at techrant.online, where we post everything we've talked about in this show. And of course, all of our previous shows are there to listen to and also replay, either from your podcast provider of choice or direct from our hosting provider, Spotify podcast. So I think that's probably a good place. We'll be back next week, as I say. I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good one all.